Okay, I want to talk about logistics in terms of timing and what we anticipate being able to get done with the rest of our time. I have a note up here that mentions that some folks have families at home and that they assumed that we would stop by 6 p.m. tonight, right, with a question mark. The answer is, unfortunately, no. I certainly would like to be home by 6 myself, but we anticipate going no later than 10 tonight. But what I wanted to do was, if anyone has an issue with family that they have to get back to at their homes, then I do want to take that into consideration. What I am proposing at this point is to split the list of 45 properties down the middle, at least, and to tell those people in the bottom half of that list that they probably not going to get to them at all today. And the board has to decide what to do in terms of how and when we're going to continue the hearing. I don't know when that's going to take place. We have to discuss it later. I don't know that we'll even finish the first half of that list of 22 or so. And we have decided to take a few of those out of order anyway, like Mr. Scheip. And there's another name.
John.
DeGarbarian. Okay. And then also the... Well, Stoneman is gone. Moylan also. And, sir, did you have to leave?
I have to go see my father.
Right. And you're leaving?
Tonight.
Tonight?
No, Monday.
Okay,
okay.
Okay, so you're... All right.
Well, I just don't want to miss out.
Right. Yeah, he's gone.
Postpone the second half until the week after. That.
Okay.
That one too.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair, we also have Ms. Collins, who's
right.
80 years old and needs to present her side.
Okay.
And an expert.
Okay. Well, the expert we can do. When does the expert have to leave?
Today.
I mean, can the expert be here until 10? Is the expert one of your witnesses?
He's the expert for the individual dischargers.
Okay, and he's been called by all of the individual dischargers, or?
Yes, and also in the interest of time, the CSD is willing to put off presenting its case in chief to allow as many individual homeowners to go since they're already here, and we can go next time as well. That's an option.
Okay.
Well, if that's the case, if the board wants to make a decision after the individual homeowners present their evidence, then the CSD's presentation won't be part of the record for those homeowners.
Yeah, I mean, that's the... Yeah. My sense is that we keep to what we have proposed. And I know that we will get through the prosecution team's presentation and yours, and we can take that expert and then get into this first group that we've kind of mentioned, and then we'll see where we're at that point. Yeah, we're talking hours at this point before we get to it. Okay. Now, Judy Vick appeared, and she did submit a card. I did tell her that I would allow her as the last interested person to speak, and you have 2 minutes. Ms. Vick, come to the podium, please. Folks, please stop with the clapping. Come on.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. I wasn't able to be here earlier. I live in the Prohibition Zone, and I share the concern that most of us here do, that we purchased homes with permitted septic tanks. We are motivated to have a wastewater project, but we're in limbo at the moment, and we're very concerned that it's unjust, these cease and desist orders, considering there is not specific science regarding each site, why these individuals were targeted. To my knowledge, you don't have specific information regarding each site. And I would propose that there are some homes that are 50 feet to groundwater that are likely not polluting the waters of Morro Bay. And it would be ideal if we could get specific information and deal with the properties that are indeed causing the biggest problem. But in the meantime, it appears to me the best solution, rather than penalize the people of Los Osos with these cease and desist orders, which risk the value of their home, threaten the businesses that they have within their homes. It seems a far better idea to me to share the burden with the entire community in a septic tank maintenance program. And I would just ask that you would consider that. The other thing I would like to ask is that because there were some last-minute changes as to the evidence that could be submitted, that once you, the prosecution, is clear on what the charges are, that the community be allowed a week's period of time to consider that, to prepare adequately, and come back to you with their defense. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Ms. Okun and Mr. Thompson, you have an hour and a half? Is that what we've got?
An hour.
1 hour. Okay.
Check.
Let the run this clock up.
You want to run that?
Mr. Briggs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Thomas introduced the folks at the front row here, but to kind of round out the introductions of the prosecution team, we have several staff who have worked part-time helping out the team, and I want to make sure that that you're aware that they're all here. Matt Thompson is going to be making our initial presentation, and he will be followed by Lori Okun, counsel. As part of that, second part of that presentation, we have Sorrel Marks, and we have in the front row here Allison Milholland and Harvey Packard. And we've all, as I said, we've all worked part-time, varying degrees of time on this issue. We also have all contributed to the presentations that you're going to hear, even though, of course, we haven't broken it up so that we're all giving the presentation. But what that means is that we request that as questions come up regarding our presentation, that we would use the person who's best suited to answer the question to actually provide those answers.
One small detail. We haven't sworn anybody in. And where's my readable sheet? Okay. Would everybody that is going to offer testimony, we've already had interested persons speak, but those are not related to the specific facts of dischargers, but would everyone who is going to speak from this point on please rise and that's all of the designated parties also. Anyone who thinks they're going to speak as a witness includes the experts. Okay. Do you affirm that the testimony that you're going to give in this matter will be the truth?
I do.
Okay. Has anyone said that they don't? All right. Everyone that comes to the podium, I'm going to assume, has taken the oath and is going to tell the truth. Yes, and of course my attorney has to remind me that that oath is subject to penalty of perjury. All right. Mr. Briggs?
Thank you. The names that I gave you were the truth, so I won't I won't repeat them. But as I said, our presentation is in two parts, and Matt Thompson will kick it off, and will be followed by Lori Okun. I'm sequestering myself over here because I don't feel so good, and I don't want to pass it around if I can avoid it.
Thank you, Roger. Good afternoon. I'm Matt Thompson, Water Resource Control Engineer, part of the Central Coast Water Board prosecution team. Most properties in Los Osos have been violating our basin plan prohibition for nearly 20 years. Until last fall, the community was making meaningful progress towards compliance. It is now apparent that compliance has been delayed several more years. Enforcement actions against individual dischargers appears to be the only way to get the community to comply in a timely manner. Los Osos Community Services District Council has in fact recently stated that action against individual dischargers is more appropriate than action against them. We are not pleased to do this. The community's inability to implement a wastewater management system has really left us no choice. Our reasoning for the proposed cease and desist orders is spelled out in our written staff report dated April 5th and our April 19th technical and legal responses to comments and evidence submitted by designated parties and interested persons. Excuse me, Roger. Could you turn down the podium mic? That's number 12, I think. Thank you. So I'm only going to take about... I'm not going to reiterate all of those reasons here. I'm only going to take about 10 minutes to provide a little background and then briefly describe the proposed cease and desist orders. Lori Okun will then further explain our reasons for recent changes to our recommendation. In 1983, this board adopted a prohibition of waste discharges from septic systems in the most densely developed area of Los Osos and Baywood Park, which is now commonly known as the Los Osos Prohibition Zone. The blue line on this slide depicts the boundary of the prohibition zone. The prohibition took effect in 1988 and remains effective today. None of the designated parties have denied that they discharge from their septic systems and violate this prohibition. Although septic system discharges in the prohibition zone are simply illegal and therefore subject to cease and desist orders, we must point out that there is a wealth of evidence showing that these prohibited discharges have degraded groundwater quality and threaten public health, and that the prohibition zone boundaries are appropriate. Los Osos CSD regularly monitors shallow groundwater throughout town and interpolates the data to develop isocontour maps of nitrate concentrations. The maps consistently indicate that groundwater nitrate concentrations exceed the drinking water standard all over town. This is Los Osos CSD's most recent isocontour map of nitrate concentrations in October 2005. Although this data changes slightly every 6 months, this figure represents general conditions in Los Osos. This is difficult to read, so I've highlighted for you in red the area where groundwater exceeds the drinking water standard of 10 milligrams per liter nitrate as nitrogen. These darker highlighted areas show where nitrate concentrations are 50% or more greater than the drinking water standard. These areas of highest concentration correlate to areas with greatest septic system density in the prohibition zone. It is important to note that these areas include elevated parts of town down here where there is significant separation to groundwater. Groundwater is impacted by nitrates, whether depth of groundwater is 10 feet or 100 feet. Los Osos is a textbook example of the fact that there is very little nitrate removal in sandy soil. Nitrate is highly soluble and moves down easily with percolating septic tank effluent. Several shallow water supply wells have been shut down due to nitrate exceeding drinking water standards. These shallow wells have been replaced with deeper supply wells, which are now causing seawater to intrude inland. Water quality degradation by septic systems is not limited to nitrate and groundwater. Shallow groundwater seeps into Morro Bay Estuary along the approximately 2.5 mile shoreline of the prohibition zone. Analyses of these seeps indicate fecal coliform bacteria greatly exceed standards, and DNA testing of E. coli in these seeps indicates the greatest source of these bacteria is humans. During wet weather cycles, high groundwater causes septic tank effluent to surface in some areas of town and drain into the Morro Bay Estuary. There is no question that septic systems in the prohibition zone are degrading water quality, and that the prohibition zone boundaries are appropriate. First and foremost, the proposed cease and desist orders require property owners and tenants to cease discharging all waste by January 1st, 2010, or 60 days after the availability of a community sewer system, whichever is sooner. If the community sewer system will be available by January 1st, 2010, the owner or tenant must submit a statement agreeing to connect to the community sewer system within 60 days after the sewage treatment plant becomes available, or submit a technical report proposing an alternate method of complying and monitoring compliance with the requirement to cease their discharge. If the community sewer system will not be available by January 2010, the owner or tenant must submit a technical report proposing an alternate method of complying with the requirement to cease their discharge. Until recently, we were prepared to recommend interim compliance requirements that required each property owner or tenant to pump out their septic tank every 2 months or propose an alternate method to reduce pollutant loading on the Los Osos groundwater basin. After consulting with the local air pollution control district officials, we learned they are concerned about pumping out up to 4,300 septic tanks every 2 months, which is our stated objective. We learned they're concerned that pumping out the tanks may cause significant adverse impacts to air quality and public health. So we would like to study the impacts of the pumping requirements further before we recommend you adopt them. So at this time, we are recommending scaled back interim compliance requirements to pump out the septic system and obtain an inspection report within 3 months, and if necessary, complete recommended repairs to the septic system by February 1st, 2007. We have randomly selected 45 properties from the prohibition zone to receive this first round of cease and desist orders. The blue dots on this slide depict the locations of the 45 selected properties in relation to nitrate concentrations in groundwater. You can see the nitrate concentrations beneath 41 of the 45 properties that received cease and desist orders exceeds the drinking water standard. Those few properties that are outside of the area where nitrate exceeds the drinking water standard still contribute to water quality degradation. Those properties are either upgradient of and contributing pollutants to these areas or are located close to the bay where shallow groundwater is flushed into the bay by tidal action. As you know, many designated parties submitted comments and evidence in response to the proposed cease and desist orders. Our technical and legal responses to these submittals are detailed in our written rebuttal dated April 19th, so I'm not going to belabor our responses here. The facts of this case are really quite simple. Septic system discharges are prohibited in the Los Osos Prohibition Zone and are subject to cease and desist orders. None of the designated parties deny that they discharge from their septic systems in the Prohibition Zone. If necessary, I am prepared to point out later where each of the designated parties are located to demonstrate that each is violating our basin plan prohibition. We recommend adoption of the proposed cease and desist orders for all designated parties. So unless you have further questions for me at this time, here's Lori Okun. Thank you.
You have 49 minutes, Ms. Okun.
I'm going to talk about the change to the pumping recommendations, but before I do that, I have a few questions for Sorrell Marks. He's going to address a few of the comments by interested parties and also some of the evidence submitted by designated parties. And Ms. Marks, how many years were you the project manager for Los Osos?
That one doesn't answer.
Yes, this one.
16 years, approximately.
Some of the designated parties referred to a blue ribbon study that was done some years ago, and Mr. Tkach spoke earlier and indicated that that study concluded that complete denitrification occurred 30 feet below ground surface. Could you address that, please?
Yes, in 1994, San Luis County had funded a study to evaluate the reduction in nitrate below some leach fields. The initial portion of the study was performed by an engineering firm called Black & Veatch, and there was a committee formed of citizens and other interested parties to participate in this study. And there was quite a bit of controversy over what the study really showed. Some felt that it showed that there was significant reduction below the leach field, and some felt that it was inconclusive about how much that reduction might have been. So your board asked that we consult with independent experts in this area, and we got independent reviews of this study material from two experts, and that was presented at a March 1995 hearing, the conclusion of which was that not only did the study not document full denitrification below the leach fields, but that it would be exceptionally difficult to do so because of the way the leachate from the septic systems moved below the leach fields.
What was it about the way that the effluent moved below the leach fields that made the study difficult?
Well, the effluent would move through the soil in not exactly a random pattern, but it would migrate both laterally as well as vertically. And so you couldn't locate the lysimeters in specific locations that would accurately monitor the reduction. And in addition, the study was originally designed to utilize some good systems that were relatively new, that were installed with known design criteria. But when the lysimeters were actually installed in these systems, it turned out that several of them were completely saturated with groundwater. And keeping in mind that these were supposed to be good systems that were known to be operating properly, but because they were saturated with groundwater, you couldn't put the lysimeters in to measure what needed to be measured for this particular test. So the data was extremely limited and didn't demonstrate that there was complete denitrification.
And that study is also in the record. There was also some testimony and some submissions regarding a 1997 study by Wade Brim regarding the appropriateness of the well monitoring network. Are you familiar with that study?
Yes, I am. Mr. Brim's comment letter was primarily about the monitoring wells. Mr. Brim felt that the monitoring wells that were used to collect the groundwater data were not installed in an appropriate way. And each of Mr. Brim's submittals we did respond to, but in addition to staff's response, the CSD performed a comprehensive evaluation in 2001, and those wells that they found were not up to current standards for monitoring wells. They did perform some repairs, they did abandon some, and they did install some new ones to develop the community-wide groundwater monitoring program, a network of wells that they have today. And they've been monitoring those since 2002.
Thank you. Back to the change in the pumping recommendations, staff continues to believe that a bi-monthly pumping regime is an appropriate interim measure to protect water quality until there's a treatment plant available. The change in the recommendation is only so that the board has time to address the concerns that the Air Pollution Control District raised. We can skip the rest of this slide. I was going to briefly go over what their concerns were, but Mr. Allen's already addressed that. There's two reasons to wait and do additional study of these potential impacts before imposing pumping requirements on any of the homeowners. The first one is a policy reason. The Air Pollution Control District, which is the agency charged with protecting air quality, has raised these concerns, and this is something that we take very seriously. Their opinion is that further study is needed, and whether or not CEQA requires that, we think that it's appropriate to do that study before taking any further action. The second reason is that it's important to the prosecution staff that all similarly situated dischargers be treated the same. And we think that in order to ensure that the board does that, it's necessary to do this air quality study before imposing any pumping requirements, because the study may show that mitigation measures are appropriate to reduce any potential air quality impacts, and those mitigation measures should be imposed across the board. In addition, it could be the case that the conclusion is that there's no air quality impacts if we issue pumping requirements to 1,000 people but not 4,300 people. And in that case, I think some more thought should go into who those 1,000 people should be, or 2,000 or whatever it is, rather than simply imposing pumping requirements on this first group because they're first. We think that more information is needed in order to be able to make a reasoned decision. In addition, in the scheme of things, I think that the few months of study that would be necessary to get more information is really negligible in the 23-year process that has been going on so far in solving these water quality problems. Also, to address one of the questions that came up earlier, whether we have cross-media jurisdiction to impose mitigation measures regarding air quality, there are a few things we can do. For example, if the APCD is saying that these filters would be appropriate, we could issue orders that require the dischargers only to use pumping companies that have the filters. As Mr. Allen said, they're very expensive, and at this time I don't believe that the pumping companies have them, but at some point, if this is the way the board wants to address the interim water quality impacts, it will be economically viable for these companies to install the filters, and there will be filtered trucks available to provide this service. If the impacts are significant enough that mitigation measures are necessary, but there's no way for the board to impose them, one alternative is to do a focused EIR, and the board could make a decision that the water quality impacts are significant enough that they override the air quality impacts, and to require as much mitigation as is feasible, and to move forward with the pumping scheme in any event. Next slide. In terms of CEQA, just, I know the board knows this, but just briefly, CEQA requires study of government activities that could adversely affect the environment, and these activities in CEQA parlance are called projects. If there's a categorical exemption, then no further CEQA analysis is required. Basically, the only burden on the governmental agency approving the project is to show that it's within the categorical exemption. And the prosecution staff has done that. Basically, there's no further burden to prove that there aren't going to be impacts. There are four different categorical exemptions that apply here. One is for repair and maintenance activities for existing facilities, and the other three have to do with enforcement actions or regulatory activities to protect the environment or to enforce existing laws. Even though prosecution staff wasn't required to do additional analysis, when we began receiving comments, we did do the analysis that was in our written submission about the incremental increase in truck traffic, and concluded initially that there was no evidence that anyone had presented that there would be significant impacts. But with the new information, we did decide that that was necessary to study. In terms of what the project is, there's a question on whether we have 45 projects before you today, whether each order is a separate project, whether there's going to be 4,300 separate projects if the board issues orders to all the dischargers, or whether there's one project, which is the enforcement program. Generally, under CEQA, you can't chop a program up into little pieces so that each little piece doesn't have any significant impact. That's referred to in piecemealing as piecemealing under CEQA. And there's legal arguments on whether that would apply in this case, because normally piecemealing only applies if the each little piece commits the board to do another project, which isn't the case here. But even if we treat these as 4,300 separate projects instead of one project, the board would have to consider the cumulative impacts. So I think that you end up in the same place either way. Now, in terms of proving the exception to the exemption, what the challengers are talking about is that these CEQA categorical exemptions don't apply if there will be significant adverse impacts because of unusual circumstances. And you have to show both prongs of that. Because of what Mr. Allen testified to, I think that the first prong is met. The second prong, whether there are unusual circumstances, means is this project of issuing these orders different than the normal type of project under these categorical exemptions? Next slide. Generally, there's two types of cases that find that there are unusual circumstances. One is where the project in question is incompatible with surrounding uses. Clearly, that's not the case here. We have a community that's on septic. We're talking about repairs to septic systems and compliance with an order, the basin plan, that applies to those septic systems. So you really couldn't get much more compatible than that. The other type of case basically has to do with projects where there are the circumstances of those projects differ from the general circumstances of other projects covered by the same exemption, and those circumstances create an environmental risk that doesn't exist for the general class of exempt projects. And the cases dealing with this definition tend to be cases where there are toxic contaminants in the ground that aren't going to be addressed by the project, or in some cases are going to be made worse by the project. So again, those cases are distinguishable, but because this is a somewhat subjective standard, I think the courts focus more on whether there are going to be adverse impacts rather than the unusual circumstances prong of that test. So for that reason, I think that it is necessary for the board to consider these air quality impacts that the APCD has raised before moving forward with bimonthly pumping requirements. And it is our intention to proceed with that study and develop a new recommendation, whether that is to do additional CEQA analysis or to the modeling may show that there won't be significant impacts, and we can come back with that recommendation. But at this point, we just don't know.
Could I interrupt you 1 second? What would be your anticipated time frame for doing a health effects study?
We need to contract that out, obviously. We don't have experts in-house that can do that. We can talk to OEHA, the Office of Emergency Health Hazard Assessment. In some cases, they've done those types of studies for regional boards. But I think it's going to be at least a couple months, and then APCD will need time to review it.
Okay.
Next slide. So then the question arises, why issue CDOs now at all? The discharges are already illegal. They're already prohibited by the basin plan. If we are not imposing interim measures to protect the environment, why do anything? And there's a couple of reasons. The first is that there is an inspection and repair requirement, so that will provide some interim protection in those cases where there are systems that have problems in addition to the problem, the general problem that septic systems aren't appropriate in this area. The next is that it puts individual dischargers on notice that they're responsible to comply with this prohibition. Legally, that's not required. Everyone's responsible to know the law and comply with it. But we have heard in this process that there are dischargers who thought it was only up to the CSD to comply with the basin plan prohibition, and they didn't know that they were individual dischargers. So that's another important benefit of having the cease and desist orders. It also provides a date certain. Obviously, the best result is that there will be a community system for people to hook up to by the deadline. But if there's not, we'll have a program so that individual discharges will have to propose an alternative so that they can comply with the basin plan by the January 2010 due date. And finally, it provides the board with an additional enforcement tool. Since these discharges are already illegal, the discharges are currently subject to penalties for violating the prohibition, and that would be an alternative that the board could take now. But they're not subject to a court injunction. If there are cease and desist orders or cleanup and abatement orders in place, once these deadlines arrive, the board could seek to enforce them by having a court order the dischargers to comply. And that's not something that's available now. The Attorney General could use its nuisance abatement authority to seek injunctive relief, but it would be a much more difficult case to prove. I wanted to address two additional things before making the final staff recommendation. One is Assemblyman Blakesley's recommendation that the cease and desist orders provide a sunset provision. And they basically do, because what they say is when there's a community system available, the dischargers have to hook up to it. Once they do that, they're done. They're in compliance with the order and they sunset. So I don't see that there are any additional sunset provisions that are necessary. The next, after the CSD presents their case, the next phase will be for the individual dischargers to present their evidence. And there's there's a space for the prosecution staff to present site-specific evidence, and to avoid having to reiterate this every time, Mr. Thompson did address it in his presentation, but the basin plan prohibits all discharges from on-site systems. The way septic systems are designed, they discharge when you use them. There's no sewer system available in the community. All of these properties are on septic systems, and all the discharges from those septic systems are violating the basin plan. So in terms of site-specific evidence, we have the information that we received from some of the dischargers about how many people reside in the properties, and we'll show you the locations. But that's really all the site-specific evidence that we need, and I don't want to repeat it 45 times. And with that, the staff recommends that you proceed to issue the orders as proposed with the revisions.
Dr. Press?
Yeah, Ms. Okun, could you explain the date of January 1st, 2010? I looked in the revised proposed order, and I didn't see a. Is that related to something else? If you could give me context.
When we started working on the orders, it was January, and at that point, the CSD was indicating that they thought it would take 2 years to develop an alternative project and 2 years to construct it, and so we were relying on the CSD's estimate of when a system would be available.
So 4 years from this past January. Okay. Have you ever heard of a sewage treatment plant that has been designed and built in that time frame?
No.
I'm asking the staff here. Is there anyone in the region, any sewage treatment plant that has been designed, gone through EIR, and built in 4 years? To your knowledge?
I really couldn't identify specifically the time frame of some. There have been, I can't think of one that's of this size that has been completed in that time frame, but
from A to Z, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Only smaller ones.
One other thing to keep in mind is that there is still the Tri-W project, which has gone through all the permitting and approval process, and one possibility is that either the CSD or some successor entity would continue that project, and that certainly would be feasible to complete by January of 2010.
Thank you.
I'd like to add to that, too. We are aware...
Mr. Chair, I can't hear the staff.
Yeah, back to Matt Thompson. We are aware of several wastewater treatment plant upgrades where construction and upgrades, some of them amounting to basically a brand new treatment plant, where construction took less than 2 years.
Okay, where you already have sewage, the lines.
Where it's already designed,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Richards had, I think, some questions.
Ms. Okun, you indicated that Mr. Thompson had established the basis that all these people are discharging their septic tanks. As you noticed from our the issues that the board considers to be important, the threshold determination for each of these people is that they are discharging to a septic tank in the prohibition area. Could you perhaps expand on the evidence that the board should be relying upon in reaching the conclusion that each of these people is in fact discharging to a septic tank in the prohibition area?
A good point of clarification. I believe some people don't realize that septic tanks are designed to overflow. The typical household may generate anywhere between 100 and 300 gallons per day depending on how many people live there. A septic tank is, on the average, between 1,000 and 1,500 gallons. And basically, every time you discharge wastewater, that septic tank is overflowing. And for all intents and purposes, it is constantly overflowing. So if the house is occupied and wastewater is generated, the septic system is, you are discharging from the septic system.
Mr. Chalfrance, did you have any questions?
Yeah, I just, a little clarification. Lori, did you say that the 2010 date was based on statements by the Community Services District?
Yes.
And how long it would take them to get a plant going?
Okay, yes. Thanks.
And when were those statements made?
Roger Briggs. I think they were made. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
I can't hear myself. I think they were. Okay. Is that better? I believe they were made initially. You've heard reference to the Blakeslee negotiations, and I know when we first met with the folks who were here from the CSD, they were indicating that it would take them 6 months to get into construction, and actually there would be no lag time whatsoever compared to the Tri-W project. It would have the same completion date. When they went into the Blakeslee negotiations, I think they realized that that was not realistic, and they changed that to 2 years to get to construction and 2 years in construction. Okay. And also, Mr. if I remember correctly, yes.
Are these comments or statements that you heard yourself?
The first one was from the meeting that we had that I participated in.
Okay.
Several of us participated in.
I want to differentiate between what you've heard as opposed to maybe what you read somewhere or heard from someone else.
Right. The first meeting was with me and others on our staff. And then subsequently...
Well, was there anyone from the CSD involved in that?
Yes, with the CSD folks. It was, there were two directors and Attorney McClendon and Mr. Blesky.
Okay, go on.
And then I believe in transcript number 2 from the ACL hearings, Mr. Fouché from the district board reiterated that it would take them 4 years to complete the project.
Okay. Any other board questions? Mr. Hayashi?
How are they figuring to expedite permitting on new sites?
How is the CSD expecting to expedite permitting?
Was there any discussion about that?
There was. One of the key stumbling blocks in terms of moving quickly is CEQA, and I believe they intended to piggyback on the existing CEQA process. They have a supplemental EIR, so that would be a shorter process. And then also, as far as I know, it's still up in the air as far as the CSD's plans. But in terms of the question earlier about the possibility of proceeding with a project that quickly, keep in mind that there is a collection system already designed and started in construction. And it's certainly still possible that existing design and all its environmental work could still be used, even if the district is set on going to another site.
Thank you.
I say that's kind of up in the air because they've talked about changing the collection system as well.
All right, thank you. Okay. All right. Go ahead, Mr. Shawcross.
Yeah, this is for Matt. So from what I understand, what you're saying is even a well-maintained septic system violates the basin plan. Is that correct?
Yes.
And does a well-maintained septic tank discharge nitrates?
definitely, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Thompson has a slide that demonstrates how a septic system works that he can show.
Yeah, just to expand a little bit on the earlier question, I just want to illustrate what a septic system does. It's not a holding tank. The wastewater is generated, discharged to a septic tank where the heavy solids and floating solids are removed before the clarified water overflows into a disposal field, which is typically a leach field, or in cases where you don't have a lot of space, a seepage pit or leach bed. And, of course, that septic tank effluent percolates downward in the soil column towards groundwater. That's all.
Okay, Michael, I think you had asked me.
I'm sorry, can I ask one more question on that?
Sure.
And how far down does the water seep? A lot of folks have said that they're 50 feet above ground water or something. Does that seep? Is there some point that water stops seeping or what? Or that effluent?
It is apparent that based on the nitrate contamination of underlying groundwater in areas where we have depth of groundwater of about 150 feet, that the septic tank effluent will go down that far and further. As long as there is no clay layer impeding the downward percolation, it will just keep going. And in sandy soil, there is no matrix for the microorganisms that cause denitrification to. There's nothing there for them, and so it just moves down through the soil column.
Is there sandy soil throughout and above the clay aquitard?
I'm sorry, could you repeat
that? Is there sandy soil above the clay aquitard?
Definitely. In Los Osos, they refer to that as the upper zone, and that is what is most has the highest contamination.
Okay. All right. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you. Ms. Okun, you stated earlier that the discharges occurring from the septic systems inside the prohibition zone are illegal?
Yes.
Is that a fact, or is that your legal argument as part of the prosecution team?
Well, saying that something's illegal is always a legal opinion, but the basin plan states that any discharges from septic systems, it says on-site sewage systems, within the prohibition zone are prohibited. So any discharges within the prohibition zone from an on-site system is illegal, in my opinion.
Would it, in order for that to become a fact, would instead of a legal opinion, wouldn't that require an action by the board, a determination by the board to that effect?
No, the board's already taken an action by adopting the prohibition, and these discharges are violating that prohibition, and so they're already illegal.
Okay. Any other questions? At this point, okay, so that's concluded. You've concluded. Okay, you had 32 minutes left.
Excuse me, I just want to add one more thing.
Sure.
I showed you a proper septic system function in Los Osos. We have high groundwater in Los Osos and high density, and so the majority of folks use seepage pits or leach beds for their disposal field, which discharge deeper into the soil column. And this is more representative of a typical situation in Los Osos. Also, I want to clarify that in septic tanks, that nitrogen is a highly soluble pollutant. It is not; there are not significant amounts of nitrogen removed with the solid waste in the wastewater. And so the nitrogen essentially passes right through the septic tank into the disposal field.
Well, of these 45 proposed CDOs, do you know how many are using seepage pits?
I spoke to one septic system installer in Los Osos and asked them how many use leach fields, which are preferable because they are shallower and they disperse the wastewater better. And he suggested that 99 out of 100 systems are either seepage pits or leach beds.
Okay. Do you have any information that you've obtained yourself or staff has obtained?
Yes, we have received some site-specific information from some cease and desist order recipients, and nearly all of them have seepage pits.
Okay. Are you going to present that when these individual CDOs come before us later?
We are prepared to, although we don't believe it's necessary.
Okay. Mr. Jeffries?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson? Now my mic is on. Can you hear me? Barely. Can you tell me what the average lot size is in the prohibition zone?
Order 8313 had a finding that said the average lot size was 6,600 square feet.
What is the normal required size for a leach field to be placed?
The basin plan specifies that a septic system, you have to have at least an acre unless you have favorable conditions. An acre is, what, 43,000 square feet. So that density is in Los Osos is approximately six times greater than the basin plan requirements.
What is the normal depth of a seepage pit?
In Los Osos, they have high, fast percolating soil, sandy soil, and so they can get away with a seepage pit that's as shallow as 15 feet. But it can vary anywhere from 15 to 50 feet, depending on what kind of equipment they use to install it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Ms. Okun, you have 32 minutes left. Michael, will you keep track of that? Mm-hmm. All right. And Mr. Onstadt, you have 2 hours.